This is courage to resist, bringing you the voices of the troops who refuse to fight. Dustin Che Stevens joined the Army immediately after high school because he saw no other alternative for himself. But in basic training, he began to have panic attacks and other emotional problems. In spite of his repeated attempts to get out, the Army wouldn't let go of him. After basic, he went to airborne school. But at his graduation ceremony, he sat down on the field and refused to participate. After meeting with his chain of command, he was told to go home and wait for his discharge papers. The papers never came, even after Stevens called to inquire about his status. 7 years later, he was stopped for a minor traffic violation when the police discovered an outstanding federal warrant for his arrest. Today, Stevens is on restriction at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, having been told by the Army that it plans to court-martial him and send him to military prison. Dustin, thanks so much for talking with Courage to Resist today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Now, how old were you when you first joined the military?
I was 18.
You were 18, and that was how long ago now?
That was about 7 years ago.
7 years ago. And why did you join up?
I came from kind of a broken home. I have two parents that are recovering drug addicts, and it just seemed like a way out. I did it blindly without even thinking.
Had you finished high school?
I just finished high school, yes.
And where did you go to basic training?
Fort Sill, Oklahoma.
Fort Sill. And what happened during basic?
After I started basic training, I just started having panic attacks and anxiety attacks. And I just didn't transition well mentally into the military. And I told them on numerous occasions that I didn't think it was right for me, and they just kept telling me that, suck it up, everybody goes through it, you'll get better when you get to your unit. It's just the breaking down period. But I never recovered from it while I was there. And on the day of graduation, I told them that I didn't want to graduate and that I just couldn't do it anymore and that I was sorry. And our First Sergeant Melton at the time, he told me that there was two ways I was leaving. One was to graduate and one was in handcuffs. And that scared me a lot because I didn't know how the military worked, and maybe they could lock me up for not wanting to finish basic training. But I found out later that that wasn't the case, but I was scared at that time, so I went ahead and graduated. And went to Fort Benning, Georgia for airborne school, and it was more of the same. I was having panic and anxiety attacks and started to have blackouts and didn't know what to do. So they recycled me my first week of airborne school and sent me home for 2 weeks, saying that maybe if I went home for a little bit that I would get back in the mindset of the military. So I agreed and I went home.
And where was home then?
Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay, so you went home for a couple of weeks, and then what?
Well, while I was home, my father got me in touch with a psychologist, Dr. Paul Adams, who was a Quaker at the time. He's deceased now, but I started talking to him about why I was, like, how I would freak out and when and in what situations, and he told me, he gave me some literature on conscientious objection, and I started reading it and started thinking for myself, and just, I knew in my heart and in my mind that I couldn't kill anybody. I couldn't be a part of an organization that did so. And I went back and I told them that, and they said that again, you're going to jail if you don't finish. So once again, I mean, I had just turned 19. I wasn't where I'm at mentally right now, so to speak. So I finished airborne school and kept in touch with Dr. Adams, and on the last day I told him, I said, I'm not going to graduate, and he said, do what you feel is necessary. So at airborne graduation, I sat down in the middle of formation and refused to graduate. And they pulled me off to the side and asked me what my problem was. And I told them, I said, I'm tired of getting the runaround. I'm telling you, I have a problem. I have it documented that I have panic and anxiety attacks, and I'm refusing to do my duty. Well, I said, I don't care now if I go to jail. I said, if you're going to send me to jail, I'm willing to take it because this is what I believe in and I'm not going to fight.
That's a brave stand for you to take, sitting down at graduation in front of all those people and your fellow soldiers. You must have been pretty nervous about that.
I was scared because I am willing to go to jail or die for my beliefs, but it's scary, you know, to face that, to think, well, if they're going to send me to jail, then there's nothing I can do about it now. And I did it, and it made me proud and scared at the same time, I guess.
Well, certainly you should have been proud of it because it was a courageous act. Now, what happened after that?
Well, they took me to the side, and they let everybody else graduate. And they said, I guess my CO there at the time, I can't for the life of me remember his name. I only spent 3 weeks with him, though. But he said that that they don't out-process at Fort Benning, and that I would be an entry-level separation, and they were going to keep me away from everybody because they didn't want morale going down, so I agreed. And they said that they'd send me home, and I'd await further orders. So I agreed to that, and I went home. I paid for my bus ticket, and I went home. And I never, in 7 years, received any orders. They overpaid me for a month, so I received, bills for that, and I paid it back. I have the receipts to prove it, but that's the only bit of information I got from them. So I called Fort Benning once, and they said that there was no record of me at all. And I said, well, that's weird. I went through airborne school there. And they said, well, I told them my story, and they said, if you're entry-level separation, we take you out of the system for the most part. So there probably wouldn't be any record of you.
So those were your only communications with the Army, two communications. One in which they wrote to you to tell you that you owed them money, and the other in which you called them to inquire about your status, and they told you that you didn't exist.
They said I didn't exist.
So you must have felt pretty much like you were scot-free then. You were off the military hook.
I don't know who in their right mind wouldn't feel that way, especially if you don't want to be somewhere and they tell you you can go. It just doesn't make any sense.
So what did you do after that when you re-entered civilian life?
I just went about my life. I've had several jobs. I was a chef for a while, and background check after background check to get jobs. And then I started working at FedEx, and they do a federal background check. I've been pulled over numerous times. Stayed in Louisville, Kentucky the whole time. Paid my taxes. I've had a car, paid car insurance the whole time, had a license. So it's not like I've been hiding.
You've been a good citizen for the last 7 years.
But don't have any criminal record at all. Don't even have a speeding ticket.
And then something happened. Tell us what that was.
I was leaving FedEx one night, and I did work in downtown Louisville in FedEx, Kinko's. And I was driving home and got pulled over for my tags being expired for 5 days. So the police officer pulled me over, and he said, do you know why I pulled you over? I said, no. He said, well, your tags are expired. And he said, they're only 5 days expired, so I'll just write you a citation. You bring proof that you got your tags, and I'll get them to waive the court costs. So I said, okay. And he said, I'm just going to check your insurance and make sure everything clears out. He went back to the car, and he was back there for a while. And then four more cop cars whipped up, and they all had their guns drawn, telling me to get out and lay on the ground.
They had their guns drawn and they had you on the ground?
Yes, sir.
You must have been totally terrified.
I didn't know what to think. I didn't know at all what to think. And the cop that pulled me over told everybody to calm down, that I hadn't been given any, like, I haven't shown any aggression at all, you know? So he let me sit up, and he had me handcuffed at this point. And I was sitting up, and he told me why they were doing it, and I started crying because I didn't know what was going on, you know. And he told me to calm down. He said he'd been in the military before, and he's had people. He asked me if I had a DD-214, and I said, "What's that?" And he started laughing. He said, "That's your discharge papers." And I said, "I've never heard of those before." And I told him, I didn't think I was doing any wrong by telling him what my story was, and I explained to him, and he was very nice, and he told me that they'd probably figured out when I got to wherever I was going, and they probably just discharged me. And he said he was sorry. He said he wishes he wouldn't have been the one to pull me over. So I went to county jail, and I was there for 5 days.
Now, the reason that they arrested you was because they found a warrant. Is that what it was?
They had a federal warrant for my arrest for desertion in the military.
And this, after 7 years of applying for jobs and background checks and everything, all of a sudden this warrant appears out of nowhere.
Yes, sir.
So 5 days in the jail in Louisville, and then what?
They let me out on my own recognizance and gave me 2 days to get to Fort Bragg, North Carolina. And I got a provisional pass from Fort Knox, Kentucky to go to Fort Bragg. And I called Fort Knox and they said that it was just for out processing. And my provisional pass says so. It says out processing of the military. It says nothing about court-martial or anything like that. So I came home, went to the bus station 2 days later, and went to Fort Bragg. And when upon arriving, I didn't see anyone except for the first sergeant there was leaving at 82nd Replacement Detachment, which is where I'm stationed right now. And he told me that somebody would talk to me within the next couple of days, but I arrived on the first day of a 4-day weekend, and I didn't see anybody for 4 or 5 days. And we also got snowed in, so I didn't know what to think for almost a week.
Where did they put you up?
The same place I'm at right now, in the 82nd Replacement Barrack. We're four people to a room that's probably like a 8-foot by 8-foot room.
Four people in that small room?
There's room to get off your bunk and walk to the door. Pretty much that's it.
Are you locked in?
No. We're free to walk in and out, but that's the loophole, because all the other places, they lock you up in a barrack, and that counts as time served. And usually they're only there for 5 days to a week, and then they get out processed. Their loophole is that they're paying us, and we're a permanent party right now, so they pay us until we go to court-martial. So some of us, I mean, there's a guy here that's been here for 9 months and still hasn't had his charges read.
So when you finally talked to somebody after that 4-day weekend, what did that person tell you?
Well, I had heard that I would be out in 2 weeks and that I would just be out processed, but he told me that that's not the case. He said it usually takes 2 to 4 months, and that I was going to probably be court-martialed. If I couldn't provide a DD-214, I was going to be court-martialed and tried by JAG officers for desertion or AWOL, and probably sentenced to jail. There was no maybe you'll beat it. It was more or less, you don't have a DD-214, you're going to jail, basically.
So you're now under the threat of court-martial from the military?
Yes, sir.
Have you gotten yourself a lawyer?
I've talked to a lawyer. It's Mr. Branham. He knows you guys. He's the ones that told me about Courage to Resist. James M. Branham.
And what does he tell you about your likelihood of being court-martialed and sent to prison?
He agrees that it's a pretty good chance I'm getting court-martialed, that they're going to try to send me to jail. But he said he might be able to beat it or get me a lighter sentence, because they've been throwing the book at us lately. The last couple guys, one guy got 2 years, and the guy after him got 15 months, and he was a Purple Heart veteran, and he had PTSD, and he was diagnosed by more than one doctor that he had PTSD, but the lawyers took his Purple Heart and sentenced him to 15 months with a dishonorable discharge.
This is a bizarre story you've been telling us, Dustin, a bizarre story of injustice and how you've been treated. I just can't over this. I'm outraged, and you must feel terrible.
We all do. It's a feeling of nothingness, like you can't do anything to get out of it, no matter what your story is. They tell you, like, the prosecution lawyer flat out told us we're all going to jail. He didn't sugarcoat it all. He said, I'm sending you all to jail.
When you say all, how many people are in the same barracks as you are?
Probably over 60 right now.
60 people, and do they all have a similar story?
All of us have different stories. Some guys went AWOL after going to combat. Some guys left. Nobody there left like I left, but there's a lot of guys that left during training, right after training. It's just, I mean, it's a mix of people, but it's just one thing that we've all seen is there've been like guys coming in and they their urinalysis tests come up that they're full of drugs and they've went AWOL numerous times, and they get chaptered out with no jail time under honorable conditions or other than honorable. But all of us are doing what we're supposed to do, and we're pretty much going to jail. I mean, I can't say 100% that I'm going to jail, but more than likely, everybody there that is going to court martial is going to jail.
Well, this is just an incredible injustice.
I agree.
I guess we shouldn't be surprised by the way the military treats people, but still, it always comes as a kind of shock when we hear a story like this. You did everything you were told to do. You did it correctly and conscientiously. You waited to hear from the Army. You heard nothing. 7 years later, you get thrown in the clink and threatened with court-martial in prison. I hope people who hear your story will rally to your support.
I don't know how the rest of the Army worked or the Marines or anything, but from what I've heard is, because I'm at 82nd Airborne right now, what I've heard is they're the worst. They think that they're above everyone else, and I mean, I've heard that out of their mouths, that they're the standard. Their motto is the standard starts here, and they're throwing the book at us because 82nd Airborne soldiers aren't supposed to go AWOL because we're frontline soldiers. And I just think it's funny because I've never been to combat. I was only in the military for little under 5 months, and they're threatening jail time, and a lot of guys are getting a year. My military career was only 5 months. I'm going to go to jail longer than my military career was.
Well, since you were in for only 5 months, you did qualify for an entry-level separation. You didn't screw up. They're the ones who screwed up.
They don't care.
Right, and they're trying to make you pay the price for what they did wrong.
Well, I just want people to hear and people to know, and I wish I could get more guys to call on their behalf and talk to you guys, but they're scared. They think that they'll get a harsher sentence, but I mean, like I said before, I'll go to jail for my beliefs, and I just think that, like you said, it's an injustice that they're doing to us, and nobody knows about it. I just want people to know, even if I go to jail for what I'm saying, I want people to know that this is how citizens are being treated by the 82nd Airborne and the Army.
And you and all the others in there are in a kind of limbo, waiting for the other shoe to drop.
I sit here, and the best way to describe walking into where I'm at right now is, if you've ever walked into an animal, like an animal shelter, all the dogs that run up to the cages and want to leave, that's the look on all these boys' faces that want to get out of this place, and they let them off for the day, and we're allowed to go within 50 miles of Fort Bragg, and guys come in beat up all the time, drunk, crazy, crying, just trying to commit suicide. I've seen that a lot, and it's crazy. They give them, I mean, these doctors, if you go to a doctor here and you tell them you're depressed, they just pump you full of pills, and a lot of these guys try to overdose on them. I've seen that numerous times, and instead of taking their pills and giving them out like they're supposed to, they just let them have them. I mean, there's a guy that is supposed to be on suicide watch that's attempted suicide 4 times. If you're supposed to be watching him, how is he doing this 4 times?
Well, this is just unconscionable, the way they're treating all of you in that situation. Now, before we end the interview, Dustin, is there any message you'd like to send to the people who are listening?
I don't know what to say other than I'm not a bad person. I'm not a criminal. And I've seen criminals not go to jail. I've seen criminals tried for all kinds of heinous crimes. My only crime was that I quit a job and didn't do the right paperwork. And I wasn't told any otherwise. I want everybody to know that I'm a good citizen, and I just want to take care of my family. That this is what they're doing to taxpayers' money, is throwing guys like me in jail and raising your taxes. It has to cost a lot of money to feed me in jail and house me in jail when I have done nothing wrong.
You're absolutely right. And of course, it's also a terrible price for you to have to pay for their incompetence.
Yeah.
Well, Dustin, thank you so much for telling your story, and the very, very, very best of luck to you.
Thank you.